We want to begin the program by talking about the opioid crisis here in Connecticut. We are reminded almost daily of what's happening in our state. And I know that she has made it a number one priority as co-chair of the General Assembly's Public Health Committee. So we're pleased to welcome to our program from Groton Senator Heather Summers. Senator, welcome to CT on the Hill.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Senator, just give us an overview, because I know that you're working on this and you really do consider this a number one priority. How about explaining that to our audience?
Absolutely. Well, 2 years ago, I became involved with a group here in my local community after we saw 11 overdoses in one weekend to this heroin crisis. And that made it very clear that it was time to take action and bring an awareness to the opiate epidemic we are facing here in Connecticut and really across the country. As chair of the, or co-chair of the Public Health Commission, we, you know, go through all the bills that come through the committee and evaluate them as they go through screening. And it was overwhelming how many opiate bills were put in this year. And it was clear that opiates are on the top priority for most of the legislators coming in this session. I don't believe there's any legislator that has not been touched or impacted by an opiate problem, death, or circumstance within their communities that they represent. So I think it's very important. The committee is actually going to be hearing many of the opiate bills in a public hearing that will be focused all on opiates for the day.
Do you foresee some of these proposals being consolidated into one or two bills that encompass all of the proposals being made?
You know, the governor came out yesterday with his opiate plan or his ideas for tackling the opiate crisis. And I believe that this committee will look at the ideas that have passed through screening, that will be heard on the floor in public, that will have serious debate and input from the medical community and, you know, outside resources that have a good knowledge of the opiate crisis and data to be to back up the findings. And I do believe that you will see sort of a condensing of many, many bills into maybe, and I can't say exactly how many bills will come out, but a few opiate bills that will be more encompassing. And what we're trying to do is have a more holistic approach rather than have, you know, 75 bills dealing with opiates that don't have some kind of continuum to them. So that's what we're looking to do. And, you know, the Public Health Committee is very supportive of, you know, even setting an entire day aside just to hear testimony and ideas on opiate. You will see a committee bill come out on opiates. I'm not sure how many there will be, but that is the plan at this point.
Now, I know among the concerns is how easily accessible some of these opioids are, and I know the governor in his proposal yesterday talked about just an electronic acquisition. Did you have a chance at all to review the governor's proposal?
You know, I did. I looked at the electronic acquisition, and you know, I do have a bit of a healthcare background. And right now, it's actually illegal. A doctor cannot electronically prescribe opiates electronically. You have to get a written script. So I'm not sure how that's going to work. And I understand, you know, that would, in his, you know, their opinion, you know, you wouldn't be able to steal the pad and sign the doctor's name. But I'm not sure how that will work with federal law and the DEA, which, you know, you cannot have a doctor even call in a prescription for an opiate. You physically have to go and pick up the prescription. So I'm not sure how that's going to work. I've just had a chance, you know, just briefly to even just skim through his proposal. But, you know, for me, this is so important. It's not a partisan issue. It's a bipartisan approach of, you know, put all of our ideas together, our input from the medical community, input from the rehabilitation community, and those who help those go through detox. There's community outreach programs. We all need to come together to, you know, come up with a better way to handle this epidemic that we're facing, because not only is it an impact for those who are suffering from this disease, but the families that are impacted and the cost associated with repeat visits to the ER and being Narcan and then the rehab treatment. I've met so many families where the parents are in my age in their 50s or 60s that have absolutely decimated their entire savings, their 401k, everything to try to save their children from this addiction. And we have this whole population of middle-aged folks that should be looking forward to retiring that actually have nothing at this point. So it has more than just an impact on, you know, the person who has the addiction. And I try to remind people of that because there are some folks who, you know, have a less than positive attitude towards what we're trying to do and say, oh, you know, come on, this is just an addict. You know, they need to help themselves, et cetera. But if you look at the economic impact of the overall situation, it's vast and it's staggering, actually. So I think it's something that, you know, our state has a responsibility to absolutely look at to see what we can do to help.
Senator, is it the easily availability of these opioids, the fact that so many people require them because so many are in pain? What is it that's driving this crisis?
Well, if we knew that, we probably wouldn't be having a crisis. That's the million-dollar question. That's the question that no one really can answer. There are ideas, there's targets. You know, I hear that, you know, there's doctors that overprescribe. But I think doctors are actually an easy target, in my opinion. I don't know any doctor that just freely writes scripts for opiates. That's not something that they normally do. They're tracked by the DEA. The DEA would certainly find it suspicious if, I don't know, an allergist was writing scripts for opiates. That's just not something that typically happens. I do believe that a lot of this has to do, and this is my own opinion, about 15 years ago, the American Pain Association lobbied to have pain added as the fifth vital sign. So when a doctor, you know, examines you, they examine you for the four vital signs that have been known in medicine and quantifiable and absolutely known for years, which is temperature, heart rate, respiratory, and blood pressure, that you can't fake them. That's what makes us who we are. And then pain was added as the fifth vital sign. And pain is much more subjective. And it's interesting because doctors are absolutely required to treat the five vital signs. So you have to document it, you have to treat it, you have to come up with a plan. So you can see the uptake in opiate prescriptions from when that was added as the fifth vital sign. Now they're finally recognizing that, and that you're starting to see a pullback. But for years, especially under the Affordable Care Act, doctors were evaluated and compensated based on patient satisfaction, driven by the vital signs. So you can see how it's all connected. If you went to a doctor and they asked you how your pain was and you said, I have a 10,000 out of 10 pain, and they didn't treat it, they get a negative patient evaluation, and that's how they were compensated. So that is starting to change. But I think that, personally, I think that has had a driving impact in the uptake of prescriptions written. Now, I do believe that there's other aspects to it. You know, we don't know what causes one person to become addicted versus another. We don't know, you know, we didn't know years ago that you should probably get rid of your extra pain meds that you have sitting in your, you know, your medicine cabinet, because you don't know who's going to come and take them. So there's so many different factors that are going into it. I wish we knew what the one underlying cause is, and we don't know that. But we need to figure out what they are and, you know, get to the root cause, because we don't want to just Band-Aid the problem. We want to really get to the bottom if we can. And I think bringing an awareness, the group that I was involved in before I was elected was called Shine a Light on Heroin. We went into high schools. We talked to students. And then in the evening, we talked to parents to recognize the signs of addiction, to recognize the behaviors of addiction, because many people just don't know. And it was eye-opening to hear some of the stories that some people have struggled with, and also to get rid of the stigma so that people that have a problem or families that may have a young person who is struggling see feel that they can get help without the shame associated with it. That's a very big part of this, I believe.
Talking with Senator Heather Summers here on CT on the Hill. So, Senator, just to be accurate here, what you're saying is the only way you can get a prescription for an opiate is you've got to be there in person as the doctor writes out the script?
Well, you can call, if you were somebody who was a pain person or had pain and needed a prescription filled, the doctor cannot just call the pharmacy and say, I want to call in 15 OxyContin for Heather. It doesn't work that way. You physically have to go to the doctor's office and get a signed script from the doctor before you can get an opiate.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot call it in. That's illegal.
Right.
It takes an effort to get it. But obviously, if you have a problem, you will make that effort. And some things before that are interesting, doctors didn't have a way to see if somebody had been at another doctor's looking for a script for pain meds. So there's a lot of doctor shopping going around. Mm-hmm. That has really kind of curtailed because our pharmacies are helping us by saying they have a data system where they can say, oh, no, this person actually just got, this kind of prescription filled at another pharmacy 3 days ago. So we can't fill this prescription. So there's things that are in place now that we didn't have years ago, and so we're trying to enhance those systems so that we can cut down on the over abuse of opiates. But it's a very difficult conversation. It's a very difficult topic. One of the bills that came through, this is just an example of how complicated it is, one of the bills that came through that we thought had great merit was that pharmacists should be able to give out Narcan. They shouldn't have to, you shouldn't have to have an order to get Narcan. So a family who's struggling with a child that may have an addiction could have Narcan, and Narcan is something that's given if the person is, overdosing. You give Narcan, and somehow I don't know exactly how it works, but it gets rid of the heroin, and the person, becomes revived or comes back. And that's what emergency medical people use when they find somebody who's overdosed, and they want to make Narcan more readily available. Sounds like a great idea. Yet when I talk to the physicians, they're saying, oh my God, you don't want to do that, because what we find now is that young people have heroin parties. One person is designated as the Narcan person, and they all take the heroin, take heroin or take OxyContin. And if somebody has a problem, they have instead of a designated driver, there's a designated Narcan person.
Wow.
So they're like, no, you don't want to do that because that will make the problem worse than it is. So it's just not an easy topic. And I wish there was a perfect solution, which there is not. But we certainly, I think, as legislators and as the Public Health Committee are going to do everything we can to address this in a more positive way so we can help young people and help people that are having these addictions and help stop the spread of this epidemic.
Is heroin prevalent in our high schools?
I hate to tell everyone this, but heroin is everywhere, and it's cheap and it's accessible. And the problem is in Connecticut, it's mixed with fentanyl. So if somebody is looking for a high, sometimes in certain places in New London, Connecticut, it's cheaper to buy heroin than it is to go have a beer or a cocktail someplace.
Wow.
So it is a massive problem. And I wish that I personally could fix it, but
right.
I don't think I can. And I don't think that this Public Health Committee is going to be able to, quote, fix it, because everyone says we want you to fix it. We're going to try to make it better as best we can. And on the flip side, I know that there's bills in the Judiciary Committee that are looking at maybe cracking down harder on people that sell heroin, cracking down on people harder that sell heroin mixed with fentanyl. And fentanyl is a drug that's used to sedate you for surgery.
Mm-hmm.
So people that sometimes take heroin with fentanyl, you don't survive that. So
wow.
That's what we're looking at, and it's vast and it's great. And we are going to do whatever we can to turn this crisis around here in Connecticut, because we don't want to lose one more young person to this horrible disease.
It certainly is. Senator, we're going to be following this. We'd like to get you in studio someday so that we can talk about this even more, but you have opened our eyes to this crisis. I have one more question for you before we wrap this up, because I've talked to mayors, I've talked to the first selectmen, and they tell me that now we're having problems with these sober houses. What do you know
that? Sober houses. Well, there are some very good sober houses, and there are some very terrible sober houses. And I have talked to way too many parents that have had a child in a sober house and has died of a heroin overdose in the sober house because they're not sober. They're not sober. They're not regulated. And really, you know, somebody could buy an old house that is in terrible condition and say, rent all these rooms to different people that are in recovery or trying to be in recovery and call it a sober house. So you can think, if you were at one of the lowest points of your life, trying to maybe stay clean or get clean, and you're in this house and it is not up to code, some of them are the worst conditions I've ever seen, and you're in this horrible place, and you're surrounded by, you know, maybe not the best influence, some people that are trying to, you know, be on the right path, others that maybe are not, and there's no regulation of the sober houses. So there's many bills in for sober houses right now as far as, you know, how do we certify them? How do we inspect them? How do we make sure that they're really sober? And it's difficult because people that are suffering from addiction fall under the ADA law, and so they can't be regulated. So we have to look at maybe a different way to, you know, to have places where people can get support like they need to. And that's one of the biggest issues. We don't have enough detox facilities here. We don't have enough rehab facilities here. The laws as far as detox and rehab are so archaic because they're based on the alcohol model. And people don't believe me when I say this, but this is the God's honest truth. I just had somebody in my office yesterday who reiterated exactly what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. There's times when you bring somebody to the hospital who has a heroin addiction, who has been able to be clean for 48 hours, mm-hmm. but knows they need to get into detox. They go in and they say, I need help. I've just been, you know, and the question will be, when's the last time you've done heroin? Mm-hmm. And the person would say, 48 hours ago.
Wow.
The nurse will say, leave this facility, go out and do heroin again, because you cannot enter into detox unless you're dirty.
Oh, my God.
So wow. That's one thing we're looking at. And I don't know how many parents that I know that have lost children because of that last heroin hit they took to try to get clean, which to me is just criminal on so many levels. So we have to look at, you know, that's I think driven by insurance. Mm-hmm. So insurance won't pay for detox. If you've been clean for, you know, a certain amount of hours, then they're like, okay, well, you've already detoxed, we're not going to pay for that. So we have to look at that too. So that's why I say this is such a vast,
right,
complicated issue. And you know, we're going to do what we can in this legislative session. You know, maybe if we come back on, we should bring the other parts or the other chairman of the committee, because you can get their perspective also on this issue. Because this is not just me. This is, you know, right, a group of us. We have a bipartisan effort here in public health. Mm-hmm. To really address this.
Well, we want you on. We can get the other chairman in. We can get you in studio for an hour and really try to discuss this. Senator, you have illuminated this issue for our audience so much. I can't thank you enough for spending some time with us this morning, and we will talk again down the road.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too.